This episode of Rob is a Podcast is sponsored by Bet Online. With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think that there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. The exclusive partner at Podcast One, Bet Online, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on, from their online casino to poker and blackjack, as they are bringing the Vegas to you. If you're missing the NFL, no problem. Bet Online has daily Madden NFL 20 simulations that you can wager on that are live. If you're into the entertainment betting, you can still bet on Survivor, American Idol, stock prices, or even the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. And if you're a UFC fan, UFC 249 is coming up May 9th. Stay tuned to the end of this podcast to hear former MMA star Chael Sonnen and BetOnline's Dave Mason talk about all things UFC 249. That's going to be at the end of this podcast. Visit the website or use your mobile device and join today to receive your new welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online wagering solution. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner, Podcast One, BetOnline, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code podcast1 for your sign up bonus. Visit betonline.ag and don't forget that promo code podcast1 for your sign up bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Sisternew. We got a really fun podcast for you here today because we got a little bit of a double header here in this episode. Special bonus coverage as we are getting ready for the Survivor finale. We're going to talk with the winner of Survivor Edge of Extinction, Chris Underwood, hear what he thinks about what's going on over on the edge with somebody on the verge of coming back into the game. Could they repeat Chris's success from Survivor 38? We'll find out about that from Chris Underwood. And then we're going to talk to the Purple Pants badass, Bryce Isaiah. He has a new single out with Eberios, and we're going to hear a little bit of that and hear what Bryce is up to. So stay tuned for that after we talk to Chris, coming up all here in this podcast. If you missed it yesterday, I had a great chat with PG Law on the podcast. Go check out my interview with PG. And then over the weekend, going to catch up with Mike Bloom on our Survivor Feedback show. Still have This Week in Survivor History and The Wiggle Room as well, not to mention Rob McKeever Need a Podcast. You can subscribe to Rob as a Podcast. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes for all of that. All right, I'm very excited to catch up with this guy because all season long, I've wanted to get his opinion on what's been going on. We've got the return of the Edge of Extinction, and somebody is going to be coming back into the game, and he is a man who his name is now a verb as well, where somebody is looking to come in and Underwood this thing. Here he is, the winner of Survivor, The Edge of Extinction, the great Chris Underwood. Chris, how are you? Yes.
A throwback. What's up? What is up? I had to pull out. I had to make sure this air horn was still downloaded, but it is.
You still had it.
I still got it.
Okay. Chris, how have you been?
Been good.
Yeah.
Been good. Just living the dream.
Yeah.
Just, you know, one year of marriage in the books. Mm-hmm. Puppy dad, added a new family member.
What kind of dog do you have?
A golden doodle.
Golden doodle. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good one.
Pretty sweet. They're good. They don't shed.
Yeah.
They are, you can have them up in the bed. You can just snuggle with them. You don't got to worry about all the hair.
That's the thing. That the golden retriever, great dog to have, but a lot of hair.
Exactly.
Best of both worlds.
If there's some, like, you know, if social, like some communist party just takes over the United States and we only have one dog to choose from, all the people, just the common dog, I would like for it to be a golden doodle.
Yeah. You know? Look, I think that if that was the platform that was going to take over and they, you know, instituted the golden doodle rule, it could be pretty popular.
Yeah, I wouldn't hate it. You know, I mean, I'm just saying, I wouldn't hate it.
But you wouldn't be special then.
You know what? I'm okay to make some sacrifices.
Okay. All right. So Chris just Underwood loves golden doodles that you just got back from a couple of months ago. You went, did you drive across the country?
We did. Yeah. So we
pre-shutdown.
Pre-shutdown. It was while COVID-19 was, you know, making its way throughout the world, but hadn't hit home yet. But we bought a little pop-up camper. I convinced my wife that it'd be a good idea to take a cross-country road trip. And we pulled a little 13-foot pop-up camper from South Carolina to San Diego, all the way up to San Francisco.
Yeah.
And then drove it all the way back and spent a month on the road in January. And yeah, that was awesome.
And I feel like you visited a lot of survivors along the way.
We did. We had a lot of fun. We were in San Diego at the same time that Michelle Fitzgerald was there.
Yes.
And we had a lot of fun. It was her and it was Angelina and myself and Kara. We played some games. It was fun. It was a good night.
Okay. I have so many questions I want to ask you about this season, but I feel like, you know, you mentioned Michelle, and I feel like that's an interesting place to jump in, because Michelle is somebody who has been very vocal this season about how that she feels like that in terms of the win that she had, that people consider her to be, she had the whole thing Aubrey should have won and everything that went on with that. And there was controversy around her win. You coming in from the edge of extinction are probably no stranger to that. Is that something that you related to, was like some of these winners talked about that over the course of this season?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, there's a lot of pressure that comes with playing Survivor. There's a lot of pressure that comes with winning Survivor, surprisingly enough. Mm-hmm. You know, before just being a fan of the game, like I didn't even realize how much opinion there is, you know, out there. Like there are some diehard Survivor fans. And so, yeah, it's kind of hard. You got to battle that personal validation versus mm-hmm. the internet validation. Right. And it's just it's not something that, anyone ever thinks about, you know, when they do win. But yeah, I can relate to Michelle in that regard.
Chris, can I ask a personal question about that? You know, I'm asking for my sort of job report. Am I part of the problem or am I part of the solution to, you know, there's so many like opinions on the internet are like, is what I do and the people that like the podcast about, are we helping this or hurting this, making it worse? And you could be honest.
Yeah. So it's tricky, right? I think that there's two things that are happening. I think the first thing is the people that are playing, you know, those are real experiences.
Yeah.
And those are things that what you experience, I mean, and we can see it. You just like look at some of the players who've been on the edge of extinction. Like you can see it. Like what happens on Survivor is you get taken out of reality and you get thrown into this place where you're still trying to navigate it as if you were, you know, living a normal life, but your chemistry is getting all jacked up. You know, your body's changing. You're mentally, you come back and you're in this weird state of like, there's no other way to describe it, but PTSD. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to understand and interpret those feelings internally as a human. But then there's this other thing that's going on when the reality is you're not really a human when you play Survivor. You're kind of like a character. You're like a character in a video game.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone comments on your gameplay, it's them commenting on the character that of you, not you as a person. And so it gets tricky for as someone who has played the game and sees that there's a lot of personal triumphs and personal struggles that every player has to go through. And then to be put into a position where they literally have to detach the person that they are from the character that they are mm-hmm. to handle the criticism and to handle the love and the people, the players that have a hard time dealing with it are the ones that kind of, those are blurred, right? Because they don't understand the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's, you know, there's both sides can do probably a better job at understanding those very important factors.
Yeah.
Is from the fan side and from the public opinion side, we are real people. Yes. The players who play Survivor are doing the very best they can with what they have. And you know, treat them as such, but don't come at them personally. But then the players need to understand nothing that they did should be invalidated or should be discredited because of someone's opinion about their gameplay. And the best way to do that is to remove yourself from your personal experiences and look at it more from like, you're just a character in a video game. Mm-hmm. Or you're something that is a surface level, kind of a hologram, if you will. So you've got to detach the emotions from what people are saying about you.
So let me just ask you, when you say like a character in a video game, that I feel like that almost implies like somebody else has the controller. Is that what you mean? Or is it just like that you are just like a person that's like on somebody's television in that way?
Yeah, more so like someone's on the television in that way. Like there's no one that's controlling us and, you know, behind the scenes, you know, but it's, you look at it like a movie, you know, you see that person in a movie, you relate to the character that actor's mm-hmm. playing, and you criticize that movie, that whether that movie was awesome or that movie sucked, or, you know, the character that person is playing, the acting, you know, mm-hmm. but the reality is, if they're taking it personally because of how the script was written or because of how the plot twist happened at the end mm-hmm. or like the Game of Thrones, right? Like, right. You know, the key there is to understand that you can't take that stuff personally. This season, especially I've heard and felt it in the Survivor community that the players out there, they're really, it's just tough, you know. Survivor's a tough game, and when everyone's a critic and you've gone through this traumatic experience, it's tough to deal with if you can't kind of come to grips with who you are outside of the game. So that's been I think something I've really focused on this year is taking my entire experience very lightly mm-hmm. and just looking at it from a bird's eye view and not harboring or internalizing any of those things. Like I know my value. I know my worth outside of Survivor. Those two things are different. I was so blessed and fortunate to play the game, but I really, it doesn't affect me in the same way. Because the tweets or the opinions or the comments, just like mm-hmm. whatever, you know, like those are two separate things for me personally. So I think that both parties can probably, you know, do a better job at defining those roles and not getting it muddled up.
Okay. So your experience, Chris, I think is really baked into the experience that these players are going through, because that your season ended, I think that Wednesday night that we were all together, one hell of a night, this week, a year ago. And then I think these players watched that episode, and then they headed off to Fiji, I think the next morning. So they got to see you win. And then I think they were still like trying to process this. And I think that's really interesting in terms of how this is going to play out for them. And so they got to see the episode, but they didn't really get to see like the weeks and weeks that were spent like still like trying to unpack what went on at the end of Edge of Extinction. But they did get to see you play. And I think that has to be really top of mind for the players that are now expecting somebody to come back in from the Edge of Extinction on this season. How much is what you did in the Edge of Extinction, do you think, on the mind of the five players that are still in the main game right now?
I think that it's my experience and kind of what I did in the last few days is going to play a big role in the vote out order, I think, of this season.
The ghost of Chris is going to be haunting season 40.
Yes, the same way that the ghost of Dom was haunting us. You know, it's just from Ghost Island. You know, it's the cycle of when you're seeing and you're breaking down and analyzing gameplay. It's whatever is the most recent thing in your mm-hmm. mind that you remember is kind of, you know, what experience you have. So the fact that Tyson got voted out twice pretty, I think it was, the situation obviously was unique.
Yeah.
Because Jeremy left Tribal and then they switched the votes on Tyson, but him getting voted out twice, you know, we didn't have anyone from the edge. Rick and I both stayed to the very end. Till the last day pretty much. And I don't know what's going to happen. I think that the fire tokens are going to play an interesting role, and I have not been spoiled. I have intentionally closed my, you know, ears, shut my ears off to anything in the background, you know, and so I do not know who's getting back in. I do not know what's going to happen. I think that fire tokens are going to play a part in the success of whoever gets back in.
As in the advantages that were bought?
Yes, in the advantages that were bought. I can't see how that would, you know, not play a factor. Mm. But I don't know if the person who gets back from the edge is going to make it all the way this time. We'll see.
So do you feel like there's any chance that the players that are in the game would vote with the Edge of Extinction person in the way that people voted with you, not for you on that first vote when you came back?
Depends on the relationships that were built ahead of time.
Yeah.
Like I was in a position to, against all of the, what made sense to the players in the game at the time, I had built a relationship with Rick from the Edge of Extinction, but also from getting back in the game and saying, hey, you're my only ally in this game at this point. Let's work together to get to Final Four. Mm-hmm. You know, let's play this thing out. And so it would have made no sense in their mind for someone like me to come and team up with the number one threat, but that's what I needed for my strategy to work. I think that someone who comes back in may fall into that same category. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about this year, what we've seen is that they really do want everyone who is at the end to be, you know, sitting there and have merit and have things in the resume where, you know, some of these players that may have slid under the radar in my season or previous seasons, they're making intentional strides to get those players out to have a stacked Final Five, and which is really interesting. I think, you know, Tony and Sarah are doing a lot of that, you know, talking behind the scenes. Like we want people here that any one person could beat any other person. There's no one at the end that's like, yeah, that's a write off. You know, we have votes over that individual. So it's going to be really interesting. I'm really excited for this finale. I've really enjoyed this season. I've gotten to know a lot of the players at a more personal level, so I'm more invested in how they're doing and how they're
in real life or on the show.
In real life.
Yes.
In real life. Yeah. So I'm more invested in them and kind of how they're dealing with all of the, you know, opinions about what's going on. But I can't wait to watch the finale next Wednesday. It's going to be a treat.
Are you rooting for the person to come back in from the edge and win? Or do you feel like that you want to be the only person who comes back in from the edge and wins?
I don't care either way. I just want I want there to be someone who is the best representation of the season. And if that's someone who comes back from the edge and just kicks ass next week, game on. Like, I'm totally fine with that. Mm-hmm. Will I be butthurt if there's two winners that have come back from the Edge of Extinction? Not at all. Well, I don't care.
It could be butthurt, or it could be that, hey, that now, you know, I don't have to be the only person that, you know, bears this responsibility of that. There's precedent now. It's not just that people say, oh, well, it's going to be like when Chris came back. It's like when Chris and when Natalie came back and won the game, you know, it's like if it's something that people point to that they don't like, that's less on you.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? I don't think for me personally, either way, whatever happens, happens. I'm good with it. Mm-hmm. If someone else comes back from the edge and wins, hey, more power to you. That's a tough place to live, tough place to be.
All right.
You know, but yeah, we'll see.
How weird has it been for you to see the Edge of Extinction back, and not just this twist back, but the actual same island that you lived on, the Edge of Extinction?
It's been strange. It's definitely been surreal. The experiences that I had out there, and kind of hearing even Amber's confessional this past episode,
yeah.
A lot of those common threads there about what it teaches you, how it's just a really hard place to exist, but it's also something that when you have nothing at all, and even the game is not yours, you can't even claim that as your own, you really start reevaluating and reprioritizing some of those things you had in your mind about where you should focus and where you should put your energy and attention. And the edge of extinction it's psychological warfare, but it also, if you can get through that, you do come out a stronger person for it. And a lot of people, I think, on this season have experienced that. And yeah. It's been really cool to see their personal journeys, their growths in that way. But I mean, I know how it feels to go up that mountain. I know how it feels. It looks smaller on TV. Mm-hmm. Everyone out there, the edge of extinction looks smaller on television, but climbing up to the top of that hill, like I was in shock whenever they had that challenge where they had to carry the 30 logs. Gosh, so much respect for Danny and Ethan and Amber and Natalie. Just kudos to them.
So, Chris, you mentioned psychological warfare, which I think was definitely taking place, at least in the early part of The Edge of Extinction in your season. It doesn't seem like there has been much conflict on The Edge of Extinction. In fact, I can't even recall one time when there was any conflict on The Edge of Extinction on this season. Why do you think that is?
Well, previous relationships and basically all of the players on the Edge of Extinction are old school players. Mm-hmm. They've known each other for a decade. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Parvati and Amber, you know, or Parvati and Rob, or all these just, you know, social connections. They've all known each other for years. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's any reason to have the the battles that we had.
So earlier this season I talked with Reem and she was very upset about something on this season. Do you know what it is?
I believe it was the blanket.
yes she was like, dude, do you believe that these guys have got a bed and they've got blankets and sheets and we had to sleep on bamboo and it was hard and these winners, they're really making it easy for them. Reem was not happy that they added this canopy bed to
Reem the Edge of Extinction.
Yeah.
She was reaming the productions. We had a tarp, dude. That's all that we had.
Yeah.
There were holes. It was cold. Dude, that sucked.
Yeah. Yeah. And so she was upset about it. Does this bother you that they gave a bed to the winners?
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah.
It was way more cush. It was like Edge of Extinction, you know, glamping version.
Yeah, they upgraded it.
So they upgraded for sure.
Yeah.
It was a lot more bare whenever we were there. Now, granted, we didn't have any challenges where we had to climb up and down the mountain 30 times.
Right.
You know, and that's its own battle, but it was very cold and very difficult. And whenever we had our season, when Keith and Reem finally got their fire started the day before I got there, we never let that fire go out once. Mm-hmm. The entire time the fire was our lifeline. And so we, for 33 days, that fire stayed smoldering, or was lit. And I don't know if they've had to keep their fire going to stay warm the whole time, you know, because they've had some of these other, maybe some more jackets or the blankets or just a better more comfortable thing, but we had to sleep next to that fire every single night to stay warm. Cause that, that sail, that plastic piece of crap thing that I have rags of in my closet.
No,
it was not cutting it for
Chris,
a blanket.
Is it true that there was like some hazing that would go on the edge of extinction where that there was like a circle around the fire and then the person who just got voted off, they didn't have a spot around the fire. They had to go figure it out. And only after a little while, you guys would make room for somebody else around the fire.
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say it was hazing. I think that people that have been there a while, you know, had their spot cut out for them. But everywhere, it kind of went into, you know, the first night, few nights that everyone made a square around the fire and then it kind of turned into a pentagon and then kind of a hexagon. And then
it took a while to figure out the diagram for the new shape is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think by the end of it kind of turned into like a half, you know, type geometric shape. And then the other half kind of looked like, you know, a star or something. People started going vertical and like only they could only fit their head by the fire and their feet by the fire. Yeah. So yeah, if you got there, like Aurora, you know, she was there one night and she, you know, she was like, in the morning, I'll be fine. Yeah. You know, she didn't have to claim her spot closest to the fire.
Okay. And they have more people there. I think that they're up to now. Is it, how many, what was the max people that you guys had, at the edge
of
extinction?
We had 18. Yeah, there was 18 players in my season. There's 20 players in this season.
Yeah. And so Keith and Wendy left, and then people like, Lauren ended up going right to the jury, and did, and Victoria and Lauren and Rick, they went right to the jury. So,
there would have been 11,
something like that. But there's
11 people around the fire. And then now there's 20 players. One's left.
Mm-hmm.
12, 13.
Yeah.
I think there's 13 people out there now.
Yeah.
There was 11 when we were out, I think.
It's a lot of people.
I'm not good at math.
Chris, we mentioned the fire tokens briefly. You like the fire tokens? You feel like the fire tokens add something, or you feel like that the fire tokens ruins the point of the edge of extinction?
I personally I've enjoyed how the fire tokens play out. I'm not someone who's so stuck in the past that I can't see an avenue to the future or evolving. I'm no purist.
Yes.
Yeah. Like I go with the flow, like change it up. See if something works, see a new style.
That would be ironic if you were like really going to plant your flag and say like, hey, this game is 39 days, 16 people,
no idols, no advantages,
nothing
and definitely
fancy.
Edge of freaking extinction. I think I'm kind of pigeonholed there. I'd be shooting myself in the foot if I suddenly embrace the traditional survivor platform. So I like that being said, I like the fire tokens. Mm-hmm. I think they add another level of complexity. I think that these fire tokens make it harder to win. Mm-hmm. Bottom line, it is more difficult to win now with the fire tokens than it was to win without the fire tokens because there's another uncontrolled variable. And you're striving so hard to have control in Survivor. That's all it's about. You maybe should be a little more subtle than Rob when it comes to having control, right?
Yeah.
But you still got to have some sort of control. And fire tokens make it very difficult because you don't know how they're being used and who has what and what's going on in the background. And the fact that you can now negotiate and barter around players you want to see voted out or with players that you want to go to the end with plays a very important role in the overall strategy and gameplay. And it's going to affect, it'll affect certain players based on how they went home.
What would we've seen that. Your strategy be with the fire tokens? Would you be hoarding them to get the advantages back in the challenge? Or do you think that you would have bought peanut butter like we've seen a couple of people do?
Depends on the number of tokens I had. I think an advantage in getting back into the game is a must. If anyone on the edge of extinction has a token, they've mm-hmm. got to get the
advantage.
You know, they've got to get the advantage. They have to. Yeah. It's just, you know, if everyone had to, like in my first extinction challenge that Rick won, you know, if everyone had to untie those knots, I most likely would have won.
Like, you had a disadvantage played against you in the first challenge, even though you right. also had an advantage of you got to practice, and then you had basically it was even Steven for that second one. Aubrey had practiced, but there were no other advantages, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, like, if everyone had an advantage or the equivalent, just kind of, you know, swapping the roles yeah. there. If everyone had, if there was five people that had a disadvantage and the other five had a clean slate, those people are positioned to do much better. Mm-hmm. They are. And so, I think that depending on the advantage is going to play an important role, because we've seen some advantages where, like,
not that big a deal.
A very good advantage, yeah. you know, or like mine is like I could practice tying string together. It was my advantage. And it's like, not very effective.
Did it help that you had already done the Edge of Extinction challenge? And I know the two challenges were different, but did it help that you had basically had a sense of what it was the second time after you'd already competed in it the first time?
I don't think that the first challenge, well, I take that back. It did, but in the same way that any challenge that you play on Survivor, mm-hmm. retrospectively, like you get a little bit better the more that you do.
Yeah.
For me, I remember that the first ball, cause we had two balls to end the same way that they probably did. I mean, I'm sure they did in the first challenge of this season, but they only showed one going into the hole.
It was the snake puzzle with the snake maze with the marble. And then, so you had to land two balls. They only showed one on the show.
So the first in my season, I'm sure in this season as well, they had two, but I just remember that I held on to the handles and I got really close to the top and I had put so much pressure on myself to win that the nerves got me and you start shaking a little bit and your ball falls. So kind of like coming to that in the second challenge, when I say that I was content and kind of had let go in more of like an existential sense of the word, like the saying, like let go of control, mm-hmm. I had no pressure. There was no like anxiety, there was no elevated heart rate, there was no stress. Like I was genuinely enjoying the process of getting through that challenge and playing it. And by the time I got to the very end, I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to smile through this. And if the ball drops, I'm back in the game. And if the ball doesn't drop, I'm going to have a hamburger and a beer.
Yeah.
There was just no personal internal stress, right? Kind of like that. Calm down, slow your heart rate, slow your mind. And I don't think I would have been at that point, you know, had I not come so close to winning the first time. And then the nerves got to me and I had so much internal pressure that I put on myself that, you know, it didn't work out. So it's definitely, you know, there's something about, you know, staying controlled under extreme pressure that a lot of like, you see that. I mean, that's what makes professional athletes clutch. And that's what makes people so good whenever they focus on staying under control, slowing down their heart rate, being content with the outcome, and typically, you know, finding success through doing that. It was weird, you know, it was weird for me going through that final challenge, but I wouldn't have been at that place had I not had the Edge of Extinction and had I not come so close the first time.
Chris, did it speak to you a little bit when Denise opened up the episode talking about the two things that she discovered during her time on Survivor this season was to endure and let go, which to me sounds very similar to what you're talking about in terms of your Edge of Extinction experience and what freed you up to win that second challenge when you came back?
Yeah, it was really neat to hear her say that. The last day, whenever we were making fire and we were practicing fire, I just remember, like Rick and I, we were having like a heart to heart, and he kind of knew what was coming. And I just told him, I gave him some, you know, we talked and I gave him some personal, you know, story, just some things that had happened in my life. And one thing that I just felt really was resonating with me is kind of this like concept of, you know, for any recovering person, it's the Serenity's Prayer. Right. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you know, God, higher power, whoever, like, grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change, the courage to change the things I can, and the willingness or the wisdom to take action, right? Willingness to take action. So for me, it was like, there's going to be things I can control. There's going to be things I can't control. Give me courage to control the things that I can. Give me serenity to accept the things that I can't. Yeah. And the chips are going to fall where they fall, and I'm going to be better for it. So, it was cool to have Denise, reveal the same insight that got me through in the very end.
Yeah. And I think that's probably also like very true of like the entire experience where, you know, there's so many things that are luck based. You can only control what you can control, both in the game and even out of the game. You know, you can go out there and do, you know, X, Y, Z, and it could be, you know, something that's really amazing. But if they don't show it, or they show something that doesn't show you or paint you in the best light, you can't control that either. So you can't control that part of the experience either. So you really just have like a limited amount of control of this entire experience. So you got to be able to take away what you can from it.
Exactly. Yeah. Set your expectations right. Set your intentions right from the get go. Mm-hmm. Any future Survivor players out there, you know, whatever happens, in the future, like if you're out there, word of advice from a person who's come full circle on it, just set your intentions right from the get-go and know that the game, there's only going to be one person that's going to win. And you being out there is a very, very special, special gift and a special opportunity. Mm-hmm. And don't live with any regrets, you know, don't live with regrets and set your expectation and your intentions, right the first time around, and you'll have a lot more fun and you'll enjoy the process a lot more. It's hard. It sucks. And it's hard being duplicitous, and it's hard lying to people you care about and you would be friends with in the real world, but those are all part of the game. You know, you're signing up for it, but just don't let yourself, come back and just live in turmoil or regret or anxiety because of X, Y, and Z that you couldn't control anyway. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Got yourself some slack.
Chris, I want to bring in questions from the listeners also, that people are very excited to hear what you have to say about all of this. Mike Edwards wants to know, how does Chris feel like that he would have fared with this crowd? I think that you would have been such an interesting wild card to have out there in terms of being the person who, I think that there's so many questions that we're like, well, what is Chris's game? I think that you would have been, and we didn't really have that person where the person who's like the true X factor wild card, where in past seasons where it's like, who's this Russell guy? I don't know who he is. Or who's this Malcolm guy who's out here in Fans versus Favorites? That I think it would have been fun to have like sort of like that mystery player. And while they saw your season, I think that you certainly would have fit the bill as somebody who, well, what do we expect from having Chris out here?
Yeah, I've thought about it, you know, I've thought about it a lot. And kind of, you know, at the time of airing, you know, you laid it out pretty well. Like we were there partying, having a good time.
Yeah.
The next morning, everyone's flying out to Survivor. And that's a hard, that's just a tough thing to kind of come to terms with. And you know, when you're married and you want to have a good marriage for the next 50 years. Sure. You kind of want to cherish your words of wisdom from family and from your wife and everyone else. And it wasn't the right season, and I wasn't mentally ready to make that jump. But I think one of the things that has kind of come out into light is just knowing that there, even as we've seen it, there's definitely been this old school, new school type division. And I know that, if I were to have gone out there, I would have probably fallen in lockstep with, you know, Michelle and with Nick and with Adam and some of those new school players. And, that would have been a lot of fun to kind of see pan out. But I don't know. I think that, every day changes. I mean, the strategy I would have played is to, try to take a step back and really just be involved in as many conversations as I can, but not get caught playing both sides. And whether that looks like using some of those sales strategies or whether that was, letting someone take the horn or me putting myself in a position with better spidey senses, to not, spill the candy or try to influence or sway someone. Like I realized in my, you know, relationship with Wardog out there, you know, if you're trying to align with someone who considers themselves to be an alpha, don't even think about giving your own opinion. Even if you're doing it the textbook way, you know, what do you think about this option? Or, you know, this could be good for our game if we did this. If you're with someone who wants to control the game, it's probably not in your best interest to try to make, you know, influence their decision-making process. So I probably would have played somewhere on the, you know, a little bit more of the back burner game.
That's interesting. Could you talk about that a little bit more? Because that I haven't heard that explained that way before in terms of dealing with. So you like let's say you're out there in the game with somebody who's like, let's use Tony, for instance, in this season. So if you're playing with a Tony or a Boston Rob, and so if you do you just never pitch anything that's going to be your idea? And if so, how do you try to get your idea out there?
The interesting thing about, I mean, especially with this season, is there are the full spectrums of ego out there, if you know what I'm talking about, right? Like there's people that, you know, see themselves in a certain light, and there's other people that, see themselves in a different light and have a lot to prove and want to prove and are so eager for that acceptance. And there's other peoples that know they're, you know, hot shit, and they want to, you know, they want to be at the top all the time and make all the decisions. And this game is a social game, and you have to understand those types of personalities. And so for someone that is a dominant character type, it is going to require a lot of ego stroking, and is going to require, you know, a lot of like, what do you want to do? I don't know what I want to do. Like what plan should we go? Oh, that's a good plan. And even if they are, it's your idea, you've got to plant that in their mind that it's their idea. And then if that's something that's happening, you can kind of go to someone who is more on the same level, where you see mutual respect there. Right. When you both see each other in the same light, it's easier to have more logical conversations. Yeah. And so then you can say, hey, this guy thinks he's full, you know, he wants to do this or that. And I'm just, you know, telling him everything he wants to hear, but here's what we're going to do. Right. So that's, you know, that was a case with, like, you know, Rob and when Rob and Adam and them, they blindsided him, but it's very interesting to see all the dynamics here.
In that situation, Adam had the wrong approach with Boston Rob. He came to Boston Rob and told Boston Rob what was going to happen, and that was never going to work with Boston Rob.
Right. Yeah. And as soon as you get caught playing both sides, like there, I mean, you're in for trouble. But there's other players that have done a really good job, just, you know, playing the middle. I mean, Denise has done pretty dang good. You know, Michelle's done well. Nick's done well, and he's going to have to, you know, if he gets back in or whatever, if he continued that, he would have had to explain some of those behind the scenes moves that he made. But strategically, it's, you want to find the middle ground of it's, and it's such a fine line. It's so, so hard to do, but you've got to find that middle ground between deferring your plan and your, you know, your decision making to someone else while also making sure that you're in the running for having moves and having a certain style of play that is a little flashy that people do know. But then you've got to, if you do something, you've got to like retreat. You can't stay on the forefront. And I mean, Tony's done it, and kudos to him. And so he's the fan favorite right now, and him and Sarah, because they're just, they're out there. They're leading the front. They're staying loyal to each other, which holy cow. I mean, just the fact that if you can continue a trusting equal, you know, type, relationship or alliance, it is going to get you so far, because when you're in lockstep with someone, they can do something crazy. They can make a mistake or you can make a mistake. But if you know that you're not going to vote for that other person and everyone else is like, can you see what they just did? Can you see what that person just did? It's like, no, you're agreeing with that group of thinkers, that thought process, but you're really, your true alliance member is someone that you're so tight with. It's cool to see that strategy play out and play out so well in Cops R Us.
Chris, I want to go back to a little bit earlier. You were talking about how you felt like that you would fit in really well with the new school players, Michelle, Adam, Nick, Wendell, people that played and won in the more recent seasons. And you were talking about the idea of, you know, the egos and survivor players' perceptions of themselves. And so I deal with this a lot in terms of, you know, doing the podcast and talking to everybody and how to approach different players. Do the old school players make it easy for the new school players? Because I have to think it's a little bit sort of like, you know, a sports league where, you know, there's people who, you know, played and won championships, you know, 15 years, 10 years ago. They think the sport was better when they were sort of like the dominant players in the sport. And maybe they give the newer players a hard time or kind of like diminish their accomplishments. Like, have you found that to be the case in any way with Survivor? And maybe that's why some of these new school players have this bond about that they can share over the way that they were maybe accepted into the Survivor world.
Well, I just think it was a different era, you know, and the reality is I was so fortunate to win Survivor. I'm one of 38 people, right? Or 40 people now, or 39. Okay.
No, it'll still be 38.
Technically 38, because Sandra won twice.
Yeah. And not even technically.
So I'm one of 38 people that have won Survivor, but I'm not going on Good Morning America.
Right.
You know, like I'm not going on Jimmy Kimmel Live. I'm the generation, the three generations before us. I mean, that primetime television was all that there was.
Yeah.
And so there's a different self-perception where now I don't have as much of that, you know, those things going for me where I have so much identity or value in what I accomplished as much as maybe someone who legitimately got on like national television live to talk about their win. Mm-hmm. Right. So having said that, when you're having those dialogues or you're looking at how different people play, you know, it can be kind of, you know, who does he think that he is? Or, you know, what I you're not old, like you don't know how hard it was back whenever I played, or like, you know, whatever else, whatever excuses, whatever your ego tells yourself. Like, I just think there has been a disconnect or a shift just in, because of the popularity of the show, we're at this point where it has a cult following and still millions of people watch it, but it's not 50 million people. And so it's a different, as long as you have like a realistic expectation of who you are, I'm not going to ever be, you know, a social media influencer. Yeah, I got, you know, there's over 20,000 people that look at my stuff, but I'm not ever going to be someone that's like going to land a deal with some thing. And so just, I think,
hey, you're like in the reality Zaddy calendar. Checks,
I am in the Zaddy calendar. Yeah. All right.
Not everybody can say that.
Yep. I've got Bryce. He's, you know, he's him and Kate are they're sister wives, you know, self-proclaimed sister wives. So, you know, like it's all good, but like, that's the extent for me. It's not going to go beyond that. I'm not going to be able to get a book deal like Rob did, but that's going to play an important role. Just the generational shift in how the new school players are treated and how they bond compared to how some of the old school treaters see themselves or how they, you know, still look at the whole thing that gave them such a big booster, really made a career for them. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's just a difference there that I don't think, you've got to have a little bit of a reality check from both sides to have a real, cohesion there.
Okay. All right. I think that there's a lot of interesting stuff, in what you're talking about, but that might be a whole different podcast. I'm interested. That's a very interesting subject to me. Okay. Chris, so let's see. Joy Davis was who's Chris rooting for to return from the edge of extinction?
Ooh, I would love. I mean, just based on the grit that I've seen Natalie portray, she deserves it. Even if she doesn't get it, she deserves to be back in. She deserved that shot. I would love for that to happen. That'd be really cool.
Can I ask you about Natalie? While we're on Natalie, that I thought that was very interesting that she said in the episode the other day, where, you know, this wasn't for me, you know, I'm trying to remember the exact way that she said it, but she said basically this was 36 days of work, what I've done here, or whatever day it is in the game. This wasn't just
like, she never took a day off. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all of these things that I have here, this is the result of me, you know, working for 35 days. I didn't sit on my butt here on the edge of extinction, just waiting for time to get back in.
Right. Yeah. It was cool for her to say that and for us to see it. I mean, dude, she had 14 fire tokens. Like, you're doing something right for that time frame. If you've got, you know, you've got 13 fire tokens to show for. So she really has been, she's been grinding, she's been working, and it's different. It doesn't look like the traditional game, but it's, you know, it's more than a lot of people did in the game, you know, because you can sit back. If you're sitting cushion in an alliance, you know, you say, hey, who are we voting for? And they say, we're voting for this person. You say, okay, good. Cause you're a number, right? But when you're out there on the edge, you're your own number, you're your own team. And you've got to work harder to stay sharp and be ready. If your time comes, it's like, you know, there's a whole roster. And the thing is, you know, only one person's getting back in. So that's 13 different stories that we've been following and we've been investing in, but I want Wendell and Natalie, you know, to get in, and, you know, who knows, to get Tyson come in a third time. How about that for a story? But only one person is going to get in. So, you know, it's whoever is best prepared and has put in the mental fortitude and kind of strategically thought through to the end, who's going to see success if they do make it back.
Okay. Will wants to know, if you were on this season, would you go to the edge on purpose early, since it worked out so well last time? So I suspect you would not go to the edge on purpose, but would it free you up at all in terms of like how you would play if you were on a season with the edge, being like, hey, I'm going to play loosey goosey. Worst case scenario is I go to the edge and, you know, I know I can come back from the edge. Maybe I have another life.
I could. It's a high risk, low reward at that point, because why would you put yourself on the edge to then be the target that you're the only person coming back from the edge doesn't make much sense. Like if you're thinking probability, you're not putting yourself out there to then try to compete with for a 1 in 13 spot. Yeah.
Nobody should try to go to the edge, but
would
it change the way you played knowing that there was an edge versus if you were on a season that didn't have the edge?
I don't know. I don't know if anyone would play harder earlier because they, or be more duplicitous earlier because they would have a second chance.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening. I think there's a cushion, right? There's a backdrop. You're not so devastated if you do lose, but you still need to be in the game as long as possible to see the full picture and create a more accurate kind of path to the end. Like I would not have won my season had I not done, had certain things not played out perfectly. Like there, when I say that there was nothing more I could have done to win and there was nothing less I could have done to win, it's very hard. It's very hard to play a perfect, you know, to play a perfect stretch in the ways that it happens because there's so many variables. So you want to be able to, again, to have as much control as you can. And so you want to be in the game as long as possible for options to exist.
Mm-hmm. Chris, the other day when you heard about, go to the throne of stone, did you immediately know where the advantage was?
No, I did. I thought that it would have been at the top of the mountain, maybe where we had, where would always look over the sunset. But I never ventured back that far past the other side of that island. So that
you where didn't she, even yeah, know where the throne of stone is.
It was where I know where it was. It was where the practice challenge was for Aubrey when she they had.
Was that area roped off?
It wasn't roped off. There we had full kind of discretion to go wherever we wanted to. But we knew that area, I knew where it was, but my first instinct would have been to go up to the top. Cause I only had been back there once or twice. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Natalie Anderson knows the edge of extinction better than you do.
Natalie does.
Okay.
Natalie knows it.
All right.
She's a beast.
She's the queen, the new queen of extinction. No.
Yeah. Sorry, Reem.
Dude, you're wrong.
I think Reem would be cool with sharing that spot as co-queen with Natalie Anderson. Natalie's a badass.
I think that they have a lot in common. I think they're both people that speak their mind and don't suffer fools. And Natalie calls people fools all the time. So I think that they would get along very well. Okay. Nicole Archer says, I feel like that Gavin's mistake in the final tribal was undermining the experience of those who spent time on the edge of extinction. Do you think that there's a way for a player who has never been to the edge to make the jury members feel like that they had a valid, worthy experience enough to get votes sitting next to someone who returned from the edge of extinction? All right. So, Chris, if you were somebody who hypothetically was sitting on the jury, after being on the edge of extinction, what would you want to hear from a person who had never been to the edge of extinction?
I think that I don't know how many times I've had to say this, but like I literally was not getting votes. Like there was so many people who were like, you are not going to get my vote. If you go back in, you will have to play so perfect to get my vote. So it's really not like it's just an automatic vote because you are on the edge of extinction.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get that.
It's really not, you know? So I don't know if someone were to make it to the end and be sitting next to someone who was on the edge of extinction, you just got to articulate yourself in a way that is valid and worthy of votes at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. Like it's not difficult. Like that's the whole point of the final tribal council is to create a framework that the jury respects and understands. Oh my gosh, they did that. Like they influenced that decision and they influenced that vote out. And just the differences with what I had and the moves that I had, it was positioned for better delivery at Final Tribal than than Gavin had. And I, who knows, like if Gavin had, you know, even articulated certain parts and elements of his game in a way that created him to be a more dominant player on the social side and a force that was influencing creating, then who knows, like it would have been very close. But I don't think, like, if you, to answer your question, if someone was sitting next to someone on the, from the edge of extinction in the final three, and they had to describe what they did, they would just have to describe what they did in a way that doesn't discredit the people on the edge of extinction's experience, so but it gives them a,
is that the important part, where does Tony need to, hypothetically, if he gets to the end, does he need to be very careful to not say, I was out here for 39 days, I never got voted out? Like, is that something where in a normal Final Tribal Council, you know, you would sort of like pound your chest, like, yeah, I'm sitting here, I played this game, but then to the people that are sitting there on the jury, who were part of this, you know, whereas, well, what's wrong if I got voted out? You know, why is that so bad?
A key, again, advice for someone who's going to go on to Survivor: if you make it to the end, you can't discredit someone else's experience. Mm-hmm. You can't. So the important thing to remember is, if like someone's on the edge of extinction, you say, you know, you give them strokes, right? You give them, you make sure that they are aware that you have a personal care and a deep respect for the experience that they all went through. Mm-hmm. And then you can lay out your framework of why you believe that the experiences that you went through are better or more worthy of winning and, mm-hmm. and being a representative of their season. But a lot of what my pitch was I, you know, I've done everything that I can, and my only hope is that you see that the person that you deem worthy of winning this season is a representation of everybody. Mm-hmm. And if that representation is Gavin and how Gavin played, then you should vote for him. But if you see that representation as of me, as the spirit of this season, and someone who did everything and is worthy of, you know, respect on the gameplay side, but also went through a lot of the experiences you guys went through, then absolutely, you know, I want you to vote for me. And if Tony gets to the end and says, all of you guys, you know, that we're on the edge of extinction, from everything that I've heard and people have told me, I'm fortunate I didn't have to go through that, because that is something that is so difficult, and hats off to each one of you for being out there. Yeah. What I did while I was in the game was X, Y, and Z, and that's why I deserve to win your vote and be a representative of this season. Mm-hmm. Right? So you have to validate their experiences. If you're not validating someone else's experience, they're most likely not going to vote to give you $1 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, just advice for jury management there. Yeah.
That's a really good point. You know, it came up at your Final Tribal Council of like, where Gavin was talking about how like, hey, like I did what I was supposed to do. I stayed in the game for 39 days. And, I forget if it was Julia or Wardog who said like, hey, this theme of the season isn't on trial. You're on trial. And I do think that that you guys played on the season, the edge of extinction, like that's the name of the season. It says it on the buff. I wonder also if that is sort of like, helps to, really legitimize, the edge of extinction person, and for the theme of that particular season, maybe in a way that it's not going to hear where the theme is winners at war.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've kind of made it clear, like they want to have people at the end who all have played a certain element of, you know, of gameplay that, you don't have to get to the end and you don't have to think, what did I do? Like, I really want to got to think hard about what I did to get here. Like, you know, they're kind of already positioning themselves like, this season is winners at war. I mean, Tony mm-hmm. said it, this season is winners at war. I wanted someone at the end, people at the end who are the best of the best.
So we want the Super Bowl,
the best of the best. This is the Super Bowl. And there's a certain level of competition and a certain level of, you know, mutual respect of all those people out there. But, yeah, it's going to be different because they legitimately just want to crown the person who say, hey, I was a winner. You was a winner. You played a better game than me. You deserve it. Go get it. You okay. know, it's not going to be a, you know, well, I'm not sure there's, let's pick the, you know, the lesser of three evils here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm super excited, but I know that whoever is at the end, it's not going to be a scenario where one, two, or three are going to be any more or less capable or qualified of winning. I think Final Tribal is going to be super critical this season.
Chris, can I pitch you on my idea for the Edge of Extinction being a permanent addition to Survivor?
Go for it.
Okay. Here's Edge of Extinction. It's exactly the same thing. It's exactly the same. It lives on CBS All Access, and the person at the end of the Edge of Extinction doesn't get back into this season. They win a shot to be automatically on the next season of Survivor. What do you think?
They have to stay on the Edge of Extinction until
they get to leave. They get to go home. But basically, it would be that, okay, you won the Edge of Extinction. It's different. You're not voting people out. You're earning advantages. There's a big challenge at the end. And then the winner of that challenge, the audience falls in love with them on CBS All Access. And then they're automatically part of the next cast. You don't like it.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if, I don't watch CBS All Access enough to, okay.
That's a deal breaker. Okay. Haley wants to say, not a question, just a comment. I love that he came back from the edge to win. I think he played a masterful game and I hope he doesn't hear the haters. And then it was heart emojis also.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Do you have any?
There's some really cool, you know, things that people say every now and then, like that, you know, I'll scroll through Twitter and it's like, I just rewatched it again and man, it's cooler. Like it's cooler the second time around knowing what, you know, what happened than the first time around. So like, yeah, I guess I'll take that, you know?
Yeah. Do you think that we will see the winner of the Final Four immunity challenge throw themselves into the fire making? Did you break the fire making?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it just depends. Like I don't want Tony to be sitting at the end. If Tony gets to the Final Four, I don't want Tony taking off an immunity necklace. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes no sense. But
you know, it's interesting because that the original, you know, when Dominic Abate, I guess the original person that thought about doing this, that he had to choose which urn he was going to bring to the end. I think he chose the Tony Caguian urn. So
yeah.
There's some Tony DNA already here on with this Final Four fire making that could Tony put himself into the Final Four fire making? Could he knock out Sarah?
I would much rather see Sarah and Tony sitting next to each other at the end. And mm-hmm. I also want, you know, I really would like Sarah. I mean, I would totally vote for Sarah or Denise or, you know, Michelle. I think Michelle's got a work cut out for her here at the end. You know, it's, you kind of have to set down your foundation early, you know, and so who knows, we'll see if she can, she gets to the end against both.
But Chris, what about like sort of like the everybody loved it when Chris made the fire. So I got to do that. But Tony gets up there. He wins Final Four immunity. He's like, okay, I'm going to put myself into the Final Four fire making. I'm bringing Denise. I'm going to make fire against Denise.
Like the worst person.
Yeah, I have no idea. Maybe Denise is great at making the fire. I have no idea. But like, would that just be like, I did it. Like, should you take the worst person who's the worst at making fire and then embarrass them? And then it's like, yes, another victory for me. I'm on such a hot streak. Like, don't give somebody that momentum of coming in. Like, Dominic let Wendell go in, and then Wendell was able to add another thing to his resume.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't think, I don't think Tony should do that, per se.
Big move.
It would, yeah.
Medium
it would
move. Be, it's it a very medium move.
Be a move.
Yeah.
It'd be a big move. I don't
like
know.
It's like defense.
I don't,
you're not giving somebody else the chance to make a big move.
Yeah, that's right. It's again, it just goes back to high, you know, risk reward factor, right? What are you willing to lose and what are you willing to gain? Right? Mm-hmm. What is there to gain? What is there to lose? And if that is an even like slate, right? Yeah. If there's the equivalent amount of loss as there is gain, don't do it. Like, don't do it. But if the, like, if you can gain way more than you can lose, then sure, go for it. But if you're close to there, it's no need.
Okay.
No need.
All right. And then the last question I have for you, Stefan Johnson says, you won Survivor in less days than anyone else. People should appreciate that. Imagine what you could have done with a full 39 days, Chris.
That is true.
It's
just
scary.
You know, next time, don't trust Wardog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't trust the Wardog player. No, it's, I mean, your second time out there is always better than your first time. I mean, it is like, yeah, for the most part. All right. There's, unless you're the first one voted out, I guess then.
I know some people then, that they say the first time is better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's gotta be a season that, that you're on the same playing field. I think it's hard to have a mixed season of like, you know, it was tough. It was really, really tough on Kelly and Joe and David and Aubrey against a all new player cast. Like it was hard. I empathize with them. Like they played really, really well, but they had a little bit a right to be a little bitter that it was set up that way.
Yeah.
You know, a little David Wright to be bitter, you know, but they, if they were on an all returning season, I think the level of gameplay is a little higher and you just, your spidey senses, right? You own into some of those things that you're not used to catching people on lies or questioning what people are saying the first time around. That's why blindsides are, you know,
they happen.
Chris,
are you interested in another return to Fiji or wherever they'll do another Survivor?
Yeah, I'm interested. It's hard to, you know, when you're in the right place mindset and you're in the right time, you know, part of your career.
Yeah.
And you have the space to do that and the ability to do that. It's hard to say no if there's nothing holding you back, but at the same time, you've really got to be right.
You should go back. If they call you again, you should definitely. What do you have to lose? That it's not like, hey, I don't want to like screw up my reputation of like you have only. It's only
I'm
upside.
I'm already the worst winner. You know, I'm already the worst winner. On
depends
the
depends who you
know,
ask. Yeah, and
so, it can't get much worse. It's, you know, it's got to go up from there.
And then you know, I think people a little bit might be like. Sleeping on you you could sneak up on some people.
I probably could. Yeah whenever you've got that
it's like only went 9 days. We don't have to worry about him.
I'd have to watch the I mean Joe and I had a lot of conversations about this too. Like it's always easy to target a physical threat because it's a physical threat and it's just a name that's thrown out. People are like, yeah, we don't want him to win any challenges. So,
but you're the opposite of Joe will probably never win. You've already won.
That's true. That is true. Who knows? We'll see. Answer your question. If I get a call and they want me to go out, fly out to Fiji, it's, you know, it's worth the experience, but I really would need to go in with the right intentions, right? The right, be in the right headspace and say, you know, this is for fun. Right. This is all like,
you're
this
doing
is all
it
extra.
For Monica. Yeah,
for Monica. I'm doing it for Monica. Really for Monica this time.
Yeah. What if you were on a tribe with Monica Culpepper?
I would love it.
Yes, you would, do it for Monica. Well, you know, and to bring this full circle, you came in to Survivor Edge of Extinction. You talked about doing it for Monica. You were listening to Tyson's winning game in Survivor TEOS Chapter 27. Could Tyson be the new Chris Underwood?
He would be saying he would be doing it for Chris Underwood.
Yeah. He'd be trying to follow in your footsteps here, coming in at the final six, with an idol now, that he could be the person to do it.
He could be, that would be real full circle. You know, that would be Survivor gods just playing little games with the little, Survivor peasants there.
They do that. Have you followed the wand off at all this year, Chris?
I have not followed the wand off this year.
Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe you should jump in at the final six here and then throw your hat in, come into the win the final wand off.
I'll be thinking about it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Chris, do you have anything you want to tell people to check out if you want to or do you not want to give out any social media to the haters?
Again,
the haters, I don't think listen to the podcast. I really think that there's a different crowd that's like going to listen to like an interesting hour long interview, and the people that are sort of like the like fly by night, drive by people on social media.
No qualms on my end. Like I have a great, you know, I got good things going for me in the real world right now. So it's, you know, it's totally fine. I am, you know, still in Cameo. Anybody wants to, get a good,
how's the Cameo business motivation going?
You know, it's fun. Like I find a lot of joy making someone's day, like just legitimately. Yeah.
I used to make fun of it, but then, I started doing them, and then people say they really like them.
Yeah, like this is one that I got in today, and it's like this is why I'm doing it. But because I should probably just do it for like $5 and just you know, really just double down on not even caring, just making people's days. But this one was from Kyle. And my son is your number one fan. If you notice in the photo from his birthday party last year, which I don't know how to see that, but if you notice the photo from his birthday last year, he has your Red Buffin logo. He's turning 12. Can you give him a B-Day shout out? You inspired him to not give up and play with integrity. I'm like, that is awesome, right? Like that's the Survivor community that I love.
Yeah.
So, definitely. Yeah. Got that as an option. Would love, man, anyone out there, looking to spend their internet days, trying to find good deals. My incredibly talented wife, still running her art business from Kate Warner Creations on Instagram. And, shameless plug here. If you type in Hope 19, she's got her own little 15% discount she's doing right now with leggings and buffs and, you know, the whatever sports bras, girls,
she
check it out.
Buffs?
She makes buffs. Yes. Whoa. She's got her leggings, her artwork on the buffs.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Face protection. You know, when you go into Whole Foods and
they make you
wear a mask, that counts. I've forgotten, like, I don't have a mask in my car, but I go into Whole Foods. It's like, you got to wear a mask and just pull my buff out of my hair. Just stick it over my face. Like,
smart.
It works.
Smart.
Yeah. So go check that out. Give her some love. She's got some really cool stuff. She's really creative and does commission pieces as well. So
yeah,
those are the things.
All right. Well, Chris, this was so nice to catch up. I hope that, we could do this again sometime. Cause I feel like I feel like you have a lot of interesting thoughts about the game.
Yes. Yes. I've experienced a whole, different part of it. So
you have a different experience than anybody else.
Yeah. I have a very different experience.
Maybe not anymore.
I don't now. I mean, it's me and the other, you know, 20 other people or well, 13, whatever we said that number was, 12 or 13 or 11, mm-hmm, yeah. Whoever was on the edge.
We'll see. You might be the only Edge of Extinction winner, or maybe yep. not.
Yeah. Go down in history there.
Do you think you'll be best friends with the person if another person wins from the Edge of Extinction? Do you think that you'll have like, you'll be bonded for life?
We'll have like a spirit, you know, connect like a Jeff totem that just like
just talk.
We visit
day.
Each other in our dreams. It's yeah. like we never realize we can't connect the dots, but we're always on a beach and there's this sail yeah. and it's me and the winner of season 40.
Yeah,
and then we come to Hearts of Reality and we're like, you know, I've had these reoccurring dreams, and they're like, no way, I've had the same dreams. Like, oh my gosh. Jeff Probst, you devil.
You'd be amazing. Okay. All right. Well, Chris, thank you so much and all the best. Okay.
All right. Take care, Rob.
Everybody, there you go. Chris Underwood here on the podcast talking about what's coming up here on Survivor 40. We've got our interview coming up next with Bryce Isaiah. So stay tuned for that. I also just want to mention one of our other sponsors, Brook Linen. They've got the big Memorial Day event coming up soon. You don't want to miss that. Ease your way into summer with big savings on sheets, bedding, towels, loungewear, and their newest hammam and linen collections. If you can't wait until then, you can get 10% off your first order at Brook Linen and free shipping on all their new sheets right now when you use promo code Rob at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com. Brook Linen for the best sheets around. All right, everybody. Now we have a real treat for you here today because this is a huge, huge day because my great friend has a brand new single that's out this weekend. This is your new quarantine theme song. Here is the host of the Purple Pants podcast, Bryce Isaiah. Bryce, how are you?
Robert, what's going on? I am blessed and highly favored. How about yourself?
Doing as good as can be expected. It's fine. Doing okay.
How's the quarantine treating you? Is it getting to you yet? Or you know?
I'm fine. It's okay. Yeah. My everything here is just dependent on the status of the other people in my quarantine. Me personally, I'm fine. But Bryce, I'm so excited to have you here. Of course, anytime we get to talk, I'm so excited. I checked out the Purple Pants podcast from this past week before this last Survivor episode, which was it was great. Another home run on the Purple Pants podcast.
Thank you. Yes, I actually am really, really proud of that podcast. That's my 37th podcast. And I just really felt like it is like I always listen to my podcast like 1,000 times. And so when I listened back to it, I was just like, I was listening to it like I didn't know what I was about to say. And I was like, oh, that's so good. Oh, what show is that? So I just really love it. It is. I don't know. It's my baby. So, you know, all of my Purple Pants posse, you know, we go together. So it's a work in progress. So I just love it. And I'm just so happy to have it here at RHAP. It just is such a wonderful fit.
Well, I also just before we hear about the new song, I just want to say that I also love that you have your mom involved. And I always like hearing from Barb, and that's a great segment that you do, and I think it's no mystery like where you get all your positivity from.
I appreciate that, but it's going to my mom's head a little bit
no,
because
why?
Well, first of all, like anytime like someone on tweets about it, I'll screenshot it to her and like, you know, send it to her, and she just like loves it. But the other day I like was calling her, and this was like a Thursday, like just a random day, and I'm like calling her and like I was going straight to voicemail, and I'm like, what is she doing? And I was like, I'm calling you, hello. She's like, I'm recording Barb's message, I'll call you back. Girl, what? Like she was really like just into it. So but she loved. Yes, she loves it. And I love it because it's just like, you know, it's a great little thing. And it's just like, you know, during these times when, I mean, the idea came from while we started quarantine. And I was just like, you know, my mom always tries to be positive. And, you know, we have a family group text message and, you know, she sends positive motivational text message throughout the day. And, you know, it's not annoying or anything because, you know, your phone call off, you're like, ooh, who texted me? And it's Barb. But, you know, I was just like, let me just share it. And it's really been a popular segment on the podcast. And I love it. Like, you know, what else can I say? It's Barb's message.
Yeah. Okay. Check out Barb's message, advice with Bryce, everything else going on the Purple Pants podcast every week. Drops on Tuesdays on our wrap-ups feed, or you can subscribe at robinswebsite.com/PPP. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about your new single.
Yes. Well, I'm so excited. So it is actually E-Burials featuring Bryce Isaiah. You know, let me be a feature. Let me let me get some hot and poppy.
Yeah, I like that. That's like when I'm a guest on somebody else's podcast. I like to come. I come in hot.
Oh. So when you are guest, are you think it's Rob they get, or you think they get Robert?
Yeah, they get crazy Rob, because I don't want to come on and then people say like, oh, you were boring. I want to be like you on a podcast.
What are you talking about, Rob? I'd be boring. I'd be like chilling.
When were you boring?
I'm just saying, anytime we talk, we just chill. I don't be, you know,
but you're
doing, you know,
you're probably crazier like on a podcast with me than you are where you have to be the host of a show.
Well, that is true. That is true. And I have to tip my hat off to you. It's a lot of work. I don't know how you podcast 37,000 a day. Okay.
I don't do anything else.
Listen, my one little podcast be taking me out, Robert.
Yeah.
Out. But yes, I'm so excited because, you know, I've been saying that I have an EP coming out, and, you know, this quarantine kind of threw a little monkey wrench up in there, Miss Rona, but Miss Rona ain't stopping nobody. Mm-hmm. So I'm steadily working on my EP that should be out this summer, but it's just such a great little fun thing to have a single out featuring me. It's called Setback, and I love it because it really is a motivational record in the sense of I wrote this back when I was like in transition of jobs, and I was like second guessing myself as to like, should I take this job? Should I not? Like, I don't know. And then like when I pulled the trigger, then like I had a couple of setbacks on the new job, and I was just like, oh my God. But then I had to remind myself that like, you know, a setback truly is a setup for your next blessing, but you have to be open and ready for it. And that's what, you know, this song is about. Okay. They tried to take my bag. You can't, bitch. Okay. So yeah, so I love it. And you know, it's a little bop. You know, you get a little 1-2 step on, bro. You could do a little 1-2, little shuffle, shimmy. 1-2.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, have your toes out. Okay. No socks, just your toes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So that would be my setback if I tried to dance. That would be my setback. And everybody would make fun of me. It would be very, very, very sad. But yeah, I love this idea of a setback, because I think that would something that we all can relate to, especially a lot of us right now. And, you know, I always, you know, say this about you. I just love that your, you know, positive outlook on things. Not to say that people might imagine that you would be able to overcome a setback easily, but just because you make it look easy, maybe it's not the case.
Definitely not. You think it was easy recovering being third out from Kagyan? Okay.
But Bryce, but that can we talk about that recovery? I mean, it really hit me when you were talking about it on the podcast the other day that you were hosting the CBS Instagram takeover, that you were talking about how that it was really the first time in an official way that Survivor had acknowledged you since you were on the show. That was like, wow, like, look at Bryce.
Yes. I mean, I it's been full circle.
Baby
and like
boy.
I said, okay. Yes. And I love it. And like I even said on my podcast, if I never get to play again, which I probably won't, but that to me was a full circle because my reunion, they skipped me. They talked to David and Garrett. And then I was like, ooh, here come Jeff. I'm like, I'm clearing my throat. I'm getting ready to do a Jeffrey.
Yeah.
And he go, Jatia. Yeah. My mouth said, what in the devil? But, you know, everything happens for a reason because, listen, okay, what third boots you know that hosts the CBS Survivor Takeover? I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's really all about what you do in those times when you feel like unsure, when you feel like you're not your best, when you feel like that your world is ending. It really could be the setback for the biggest setup of your life. And that's really the way I choose to look at my life. And I really feel like, especially in this corona time when there's so many people losing their jobs, there's so many people at home, there's like, you know, everyone is at like, I don't know what to do. But sometimes we just have to sit and be still. And it's like, maybe it's the best time for us to reconnect with our families. Maybe it's the best time to clean our house. It's just a lot of things that we can do. And, you know, when we come up out of this, we're going to be the best us that we could be. Okay. Some say it's a setback. I say it's a come up.
Yeah. A setup.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. we're set up now after this. So Bryce, what are we going to listen to? We're going to hear a piece of the song.
Yeah, it's just a little snippet. I think it is just the chorus. And then I think it's the beginning part of my verse. Okay. I'm spitting that heat and that smoke.
All right. Here is a little bit of Setback. Eberios featuring the great Purple Pants badass Bryce Isaiah.
It ain't really nothing to survive us. Natural born hustlers are survivors.
Shout to my hustlers that don't take no for an answer and that keep on pushing. Okay. I'm talking looking through the sofa, underneath the couch, moving all the cushions.
Get that money, get that money.
Well, one door closed, another pops open. Try to take my bag, you can't, bitch. I'm a household name, I know you hear it, sis. It's a marathon, not a race, bitch. In the long haul, it's called endurance, sis. I'm a survivor, I don't give up quick. Even kidnap myself, I'll help you look, bitch. You know where to find me at the top, sis.
Running high on the E-way, they tried to stop my wave, but I came right back on. Fly high on the airwaves, they tried to stop my bag, but I made more racks on. Turn the tables like a DJ, they tried to put me to shame, so I had to flip the game on. It ain't really nothing to survive us. Natural born hustlers are survivors.
Some say it's a setback. I say...
Oh, it's a comeback.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
I love it. Ooh, I love it. Yes. Eberios featuring Bryce Isaiah, Setback, available on all digital music platforms, stream, download, purchase it. Let me see it. I want to see it in your stories. Tag me if you're feeling it. Yes. Let me know if you're not. Let me know. I don't care. But yes, some say it's a setback. I say it's a come up. Okay.
Yes. Where do we find it? I know you say all music platforms. What do we look for? Just look for Setback?
You can look for Eberios featuring Bryce Isaiah, or you can type in Bryce Isaiah and it will come up under my name as well too. But yes, Setback. Okay. Google, Spotify, iTunes, Dreezy. My Uncle Pookie got it in the back of his car. So if y'all around Philly, just look for Uncle Pookie.
That he's back to work.
Yes, he's a hustler. Okay. So he got to work during this time. So he got Pampers, lotions, oils, and you know, my new single out.
Yeah. Wow. Bryce, that you are all over all of these mediums, music, Instagram, podcast, that where else can we get you?
I mean, I don't know. You might can look me up on a fans only. I don't know. The times haven't come that tough. Yes, I mean that, you know, I just
your
you know,
Cameo.
Yes, Cameo, Baby Boys on Cameo. You know, Mother's Day is coming up. Mom! Okay. What mom would want to wake up today? Okay.
Mother.
Nicole, you book yours for Nicole yet? Yeah. Nicole!
Yeah, I'm gonna get that one for her. Okay. Well, this is great. What else are you watching on TV, Bryce?
I'm probably saying this wrong. Wanko.
Wank? I don't think it's called Wanko. You sure you're not on OnlyFans again?
Sorry. I am watching Wanko. Wait, is it Wanko?
I don't know what show you're talking about.
So it's about that show on Netflix. It's a limited series about like the Davidian Christ and
Wanko.
Wake up. Sorry. Y'all know I'm a little slow. Don't judge me. Okay. But yeah. So Wanko, right? wait. No, just say it one more time, Robert, so I know.
Wako.
Waco, Waco. Now I know. Waco, and that, whoo, that story, that just is crazy to me. And I've always heard stories about it, but to see this story, and basically it's based on the book that the FBI interrogator wrote. I was like, ooh, and I'm definitely watching.
What was the other show you talked about with the old lesbian couple? What was that show?
A Secret Love.
Secret Love.
So that's like a sad story. I got roped into that because, you know, Netflix, you turn on Netflix, like, ooh, here's something new. And I was like, oh my God. But A Secret Love, oh my God, is amazing. I was like super crying at that. But you listen, I'm Pat. She tried it a little bit. Pat was trying it. And then what's my other show? What is it? Outer Banks. Woo. Yeah. Now I'm trying to pace myself on Outer Banks because there's only so many episodes. So I'm trying to like watch an episode tonight, because if not, I would just binge it in all one night. And I just, you know, want something to look forward to. So the Outer Banks and then 90 Day Fiancé, child, big. I'm big time. Is trying it over there.
Yeah. I didn't keep up with the new 90 Day Fiancé. I got to look at that because I enjoyed it when I was watching it last season. But I was trying to get you to watch Too Hot to Handle, and I feel like that you were resistant.
So no, I wasn't resistant. It's on my list, but it's just like sometimes I feel like
you could have a field day with that show.
Is it too late for me to start?
You would have liked it. I think that you would have. You know what the idea of that show was?
It was like a bunch of zaddies and a bunch of hot girls. They go on this beach and they think they're on a dating show. Yeah. And then the computer Siri be like, you can't hook up with anybody.
That's right. That's right. Setbacks.
Yes. A whole bunch of setbacks. And some people be like, I'm not listening to no Siri.
Yeah.
So.
And they lose the money if they hook up.
Oh, and how much money are they talking about?
not that much. No. Yeah, that was a fun show. You would have liked that one. But you should watch one episode and see if see if you liked it.
I went tonight, and I've been watching a challenge with Jay. Jay's been killing it.
Do you normally watch that?
So I don't normally watch it. So I've seen a couple of seasons. I'm friends with Anissa from Philly. So whenever she's on it, I try to watch it, but I don't normally watch it. But, you know, I try to support my girl, Davon, you know, Josh Martinez. And then, you know, Jay, I was like, you know, he made Freak of the Week the other day. So I said, let me watch this. And then I watched it and I'm like, wait, he got out, and then he got back in, and then he got back out. I was like, Jay is killing it.
I missed the episode where Stephen Fishback got Freak of the Week. Why was he Freak of the Week?
Because, listen, I was just scrolling through the Instagram, you know, at night, and I just happened to come across Stephen's page, and Stephen was laid out
with the old school t-shirt.
Yes, yeah. But okay. Had a little hip action. What in the world is going on with Steven?
Because I wore the old school shirt on the Know It Alls podcast. I think he was trying to outdo me.
That photo, he did outdo you, baby.
He's
boy.
Very competitive. He's very competitive. He's campaigning for the Zaddy calendar. Yeah. Woo. Has that started yet? Campaigning for Zaddy calendar 2021?
2021, it's a lot. The DMs is like, you know, a lot of people, you know, just saying like, I'm in it, right? I'm like, well, we got a whole committee, so it ain't just me.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, and it's just a lot of pressure because now it's like an actual thing. And so now we got to raise the bar a little bit. So it's a lot. Okay. But I mean, one thing's for certain, two things for sure. It's a lot of zaddies out there on Survivor. So that ain't the hard part. But it's just, you know, trying to compile them all down, you know, beat them up out the DMs. It's a lot.
Yep. Tell me, the Survivor finale is on Wednesday. Do you think that we are going to have Survivor Kagyan in the winner's circle once again for the third time?
Well, you know, three is a magic number for me. Third out, this could be the third time, but I'm nervous. And I feel like whenever I project what I want to happen, it don't happen.
Yeah.
So I'm a little nervous, but I will say this. Michelle Fitzgerald kind of proved to me this episode because, you know, I ain't gonna lie. You know me. I love me some Shelly. But I'm like, what is Shelly doing this season? Like, you know, her back's been against the wall this whole time. But like, I'm like, where is the power moves at? And I just have to say, like, this episode that I got to see Shelly, that's what I call her in my head, Shelly. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Could that setback be the biggest come up for Shelly? So I don't know. I got my eye on Shelly. I would love it to be a Kagyan, but I don't want to like get too excited because then it wouldn't happen. But I like the people that they have left. I am really excited for. I don't know. Like, you know, I'm excited for Denise.
Yeah.
If she's excited for it. You know, I don't know if she really excited for it, or I don't know if, you know, she just want a bowl of rice, but
the rice.
I mean, I know she wanted a belly full. So I definitely love Denise and I love her playership, but I had said to Wendell last week when we watched, I'm like, it seems like Denise's energy is like gone and like, she's not as like pumped up as she was, but I mean, it's day what? 33, 32. I don't know past day 9. So I don't know what that's like, but Denise is another great one. So I'm just excited. Ben, I mean, although like, you know, say what you want about baby boy Ben, he's where he's at right now. He's been cussing a whole bunch of people out. He's made the right alliances. And I mean, what a better time for him to flip on Sarah and Tony if he was going to. And then, like, I mean, I'm just saying, and Indeed.com is open for resumes right now. So a lot can happen. And then, don't get me started. Then we got the win back. So somebody could win back. Somebody could way back into the challenge. Yep. So I don't know, Rob. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Bryce, they're going to have this Zoom finale on Wednesday. Could we potentially, should we be watching to see maybe if you are going to be popping out behind Wendell's couch? Is that possible?
That is more than possible. You should keep your eye out, okay? Because you better believe
I'm popping, popping out of Wendell's couch.
I'm going to be walking back and forth to from the kitchen to the sink about 1,000 times.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I walking in front of the screen?
Oh, I didn't know you were filming this for you right now. Hey, Jeff. Oh, listen. Listen. Huh? Hey. Oh, you said power. Oh, I'm sorry, Jeff. I thought you said my name. I'm so sorry. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. You said Kagyan. Oh, you meant Sarah and Tony. Hey, Jeff. Listen. Listen, Jeff owe me. Okay. He speak to me in my review. Listen.
Yeah, he owes you a question.
Listen, Wendell might have to go to the bathroom. I might have to be a seat filler. Okay. Listen. Can you imagine if like they pan to the Zoom and you just see me?
Yeah. It's like the Don't Rush video, right?
Ah, yes. Robert, why don't you have me cracking up? Because mind you, yeah, you know me too well because you already know.
You could do it. You could do it. It'd be huge. It'd be huge.
Yeah, I listen. When it was like, you can't come over. I said, oh, okay. I won't. I was like, it's my mom's birthday that way. Cause I was like, I'm not going to be there anyway. But bitch, I got the key. Okay. Knock, knock. What's up?
Okay. We'll see.
I left some butter pecan in the refrigerator. I just came to get it. You think I'm playing?
Yeah. All right. Bryce, anything else that you want to talk about?
I mean, I don't know. Just, you know, setback. E. Burial's featuring Bryce Isaiah setback. I'm so excited. I love it. And, you know, I feel like every song that comes out, baby boy, is a little better and better. So, yes. And I'm just really excited for, you know, my EP to drop this summer. And, you know, you baby boy just trying to do his little thing over here out here, just in my own little lane, my own little corner. I'm just, you know, just trying to do what I could do.
Okay. All right. Bryce, always a pleasure to get to catch up. Anytime you want to come on and talk about anything, you just let me know when.
Okay. Well, you know, they pushed the Housewives of Potomac. I can't even talk. The Housewives of Potomac back to the summer. So I'm going to need you to watch an episode or two, Robert.
You tell me what to watch and I'll look at it.
Okay. All right.
Okay. All right.
Don't check my OnlyFans, but you know, Housewives of Potomac, you could do that.
Yeah. Okay. You don't have OnlyFans. Come on. Stop it. How's your back doing?
Whew. Chalet. So much better. Okay. And mind you, wait, before we go, do you know the fatality rate of slip and falls in a bathroom?
I heard you said it was a lot on the podcast.
Robert, I skated deaf.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, because, you know, they say don't Google stuff, but you know, I Googled it. The fatality rate for somebody 65 and older that lives alone for a slip and fall in the bathroom is over 40%.
Wow. Wait, so what does that mean? So 40% of the people that slip and fall die, or 40% of the people that are over 65 that die was because they slipped and fell in the shower?
40. Well, now, mind you, I don't know where they got this number from, but, you know, I don't know if it's a credible source, but 40, they said 40% of people that are 65 and older that live alone, yeah, that have a slip and fall in the shower, like, it's fatal.
Wow. Okay.
So, I mean, I ain't nowhere near 65. You know, I'm in my early to late 20s to early 30s. But I'm just saying, like, whoo, Chalet.
Yeah. All right. Be careful. Don't listen to Setback in the shower. Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, don't dry off. And then you listen to it. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I got my orders, Dr. Robert.
Yeah. Bryce and E. Berrios are not responsible for what happens if you listen in the shower. Okay.
Not at all.
Yeah. All right. Bryce, have a great weekend. Okay.
Thank you, Rob.
Everybody, there you have it. Bryce Isaiah here on the podcast. Always love catching up with Bryce. Be sure to check out the Purple Pants podcast in our Wrap Ups feed every week. Those drop on Tuesdays. Be sure to look out for Bryce or robinswebsite.com/PPP. All right. That's going to do it for us here today. Of course, you know, we've got so much going on our Robins Podcast Patreon account. We dropped two new Patreon podcasts on Thursday. We did our Facebook Thursday, did it a day early. Usually it's Facebook Friday. We did our Patron 5 for 5 with the First Lady of Podcasting. We'll be back with Patron Monday Night Trivia as well, and much more going on in our Patron Facebook group. We're still raising money for directrelief.org through the end of the Survivor season. If you come on board as a patron, we're going to donate that new contribution and a matching contribution from myself to directrelief.org, providing PPE for doctors and nurses fighting the coronavirus. robinswebsite.com/patron for that. So that's going to do it for us here today. If you're wondering why there's still so much time left on your timeline, there is, if you listen to the clip at the beginning of the episode, I told you that there's going to be a clip coming up talking about UFC. Chael Sonnen and Dave Mason from Bet Online are going to be talking about UFC 249. If you want to hear about that, which is going to be on May 9th, you can listen to what's coming up. Otherwise, this is the end of your Robins Podcast content. Thanks for listening. Take care. Have a good one. Bye.
All right. Now we are joined by Dave Mason from BetOnline.ag. Dave, we can finally talk about some fights. UFC 249 is going to happen. Let's just start with that, man. Does it feel good to get back to some normalcy?
No, absolutely. And, you know, as I've told you before, UFC is one of my favorite sports. So makes it even better. Been waiting a long time here for some real sports action. And it's a great card, too. And three cards within a week, it's looking like. So we're excited.
Hey, Dana was just talking about adding a fourth. I mean, if he adds a fourth, not only is that four cards to look forward to, but on an average of 10 fights per card. I mean, if you're a fight fan, you got a busy month ahead.
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait. Finally put my Netflix machine on the back burner and watch some sports again. I can't wait.
All right, well, let's start with the main event. I mean, it's going to be for an interim world title fight. You're talking about Justin Gaethje versus Tony Ferguson. Before we get in the odds of it, this fight is different now that it's May 9th as opposed to April 18th. In this way, Justin Gaethje accepted that fight on very short notice. And even though he was training and kind of keeping his weight down, it's totally different to have a signed contract and really be pushing and motivated. The mere fact that they've given him three extra extra weeks to train. That does change how this fight looks. Do you agree?
No, 100%. You know, those short notice fights are always a tough one for you fighters, obviously. And we recognize that the odds and the results. When the Khabib fight got canceled and he had to pull out and they replaced him with Justin Gaethje, I wasn't too disappointed. Sure, I want to see Khabib versus El Kakoui, no doubt. But I mean, you know, from a fan standpoint, just a good old slugfest, it's not going to get any better than this one, man. I can't wait. You know, we had Tony Ferguson at minus 172 favorite. He's what, won 12 fights in a row. And just Justin Gaethje off a 3-fight win streak. He's a plus 147 underdog. So I can't wait for this one. Just as a fan of the sport and a fan of competition, it doesn't get any better than this. There's no way this fight can be boring. It's impossible.
Dana White just did an interview. He was promoting this fight, and he said, I guarantee you this will be the most violent fight you've ever seen. And that was a very interesting word. I've never heard him use that word. So I was sitting back and pondering, what exactly does that mean? And do I agree? And you know what? I think he used the right word. This is going to be chaos and violence in a controlled area for up to 25 minutes.
No, absolutely. I mean, you look at Ferguson with those elbows. I mean, his pointy elbows and his nonstop pace moving forward. Then Justin Gaethje and how he hits so hard. And he goes in there and balls to the wall. I mean, it's not going to be any kind of strategy, feeling each other out stuff. These guys are going to be going at it, swinging for the fences. Both guys are going to be bleeding. The mat's going to be soaked with blood. I can't wait.
All right, so give me a line on it. What's BetOnline thinking about this fight? I imagine they're favoring Tony.
Yeah, Tony's minus 172. The take back on Gaethje is plus 147.
That's all? That's all?
Yeah.
Negative one, that's close. That's close odds.
Yeah, I mean, it's gone down and up a little bit. It was, you know, down to about minus 150 the other day. So it's going up and down. You know, Gaethje, he just hits so darn hard, and he's on that 3-fight win streak. He's hot. You know, it's going to be one of those fights. I think it comes down to cardio and Tony. And Tony gets hit, too. He's awesome. He's one of my favorite fighters, but he has been known to take a couple hits to the face. So if Gaethje can catch him, you don't know. You know, he's been knocked down plenty, Ferguson. But I think Ferguson takes it in deep water with that relentless cardio. And that's what I'm counting on for a, you know, fourth, fifth round stoppage.
All right. So we got another title fight. The current champion, Triple C, Henry Cejudo, is going to take on former champion Dominick Cruz. You go first on this one, but then you got to let me give you my opinion because I think I have an interesting take. Take it away.
Oh, good. You know, Dominick Cruz, maybe the best fighter at that weight class ever, arguably. Henry Cejudo, man, the way he's poured it on the last couple of years, he's just become, you know, he's always had that potential being a former Olympic gold medalist, and he's really put it together the last year and a half, 2 years since he beat Demetrius Johnson. Oh boy, I mean, I have to. Cejudo is a minus 225 favorite, and I'm going to be on him. I mean, Cruz, he's been off. His last win was almost 4 years ago. I mean, that's just such a long time. And he came back, he fought those 3 fights, he looked okay, but he didn't look like the dominant Dominick Cruz of old. So, you know, that 4 years off is this too much for me. I'm going to be on Cejudo, and who's peaking, and he looks better than ever.
All right, Dave, I am not ready to part with my money. I'm not even ready to publicly predict an upset here. However, this has all the makings of an upset. This is a stylistic problem to the highest of levels for Henry. Look, you can tell me on paper that Henry's a better wrestler, and you would be right. He was the Olympic champion. He was the greatest wrestler alive. But you can't show me a whole bunch of his fights where he's ever effectively used his wrestling.
Yep.
I only bring that up because with Dominick's footwork and Dominick's ability to control range, to peck away at you, in many ways, I think you could agree with me that wrestling is not going to be the solidifier in this contest. So if wrestling's not, that only leaves the striking, and Dominick Cruz has only been outstruck one time in his life, and it was a huge shock. So if we're to use history, use the body of work of these two athletes, and agree that there's largely going to be stand-up, that's Dominick's world. In my opinion, this is all the makings for potential upset. That's all I'm saying.
I love it. Opposite sides. Let's do it.
Okay, so I don't know if you guys are taking action on this one, but I'm going to assume you are because it's Ngannou versus Rozenstruik. That was scheduled to be a main event, so I'm guessing that BetOnline is looking at it. Am I right?
We have all odds on all the fights. Absolutely. Ngannou's currently minus 285 favorite. Take back on Rozenstruik is plus 240. And holy God, is this going What a matchup this is. I mean, talk about heavy hitters, two just giants of men, two big heavyweights. I can't wait for this one. You know, Rozenstruik, he's got a great chin. I don't think anybody hits harder than Ngannou, but Rozenstruik has a heavy chin. And so there's some live dog action there, plus 240. Sometimes it just comes down to who lands a big shot first. You know, and Ngannou, I sometimes question his cardio. So if he swings himself, punches himself out early and it's going into two, second or third round, I favor Rozenstruik there. I think he can keep moving forward like he did his last fight.
And see, that's interesting you bring that up, because this is another fight. Because of the change of date, it changes the complexity of the fight. This was originally going to be a main event, which means it was originally going to be a potential of 25 minutes. Now that it's down the card, it's got a maximum of 15 minutes. And to your point about Ngannou, who does have a little bit of cardio issues. I mean, that's just a reality when you're packing that much muscle around. In many ways, the lower placement favors Ngannou.
Absolutely. I mean, the five-round fight, absolutely. I mean, I don't think those guys can make it in the fourth or fifth round, but the three-round fight absolutely favors Ngannou more than it would in a five-round fight. Either way, he's a legitimate favorite, but I just like that. I like that live dog money on plus 240 on Rozenstruik.
All right, let's talk about the rematch. Anthony Pettis, Showtime, taking on the Cowboy. Donald Cerrone, is this too much too soon for Cowboy?
I think it is. I mean, especially with his comments that came out the other day where he wasn't mentally into the McGregor fight a few months ago. He didn't look good and he didn't fight well, and he confirmed it this week. I don't know if that was just him talking whatever, but he's fought so much, man. I mean, there's no tougher guy in the sport, but he's just coming to an end, I think. You know, you see it with these guys sometimes, and he's just been on a, he hasn't won much lately. And Pettis, you know, I've never been a big Pettis fan, but he's impressed me the last few fights. He's one of those guys who I think had always had all the talent, but I kind of questioned, you know, his mindset and heart sometimes. And again, heart for a fighter, because I don't have half the heart this guy does. But he's looked a lot tougher, and he's been in some real wars lately. So I just think Pettis deserve favor. He's minus 136 right now. Take back on Cerrone. He's plus 116, but I don't know. Cerrone's just has not looked good the last few fights. Tough as hell, sure, but he's going down, I think.
I went back and I rewatched that first fight. Dave, it wasn't competitive in the least. Pettis came out, he hit him with what they called a kick to the body, but it almost looked like a knee, like more of the knee hit. I mean, it's just a really hard shot that would stop a fight, and Cerrone was too tough to stop. He tried to push through it, but it was all downhill from there. Pettis kind of peppered him with a couple of punches, came back to that exact same shot, that exact same kick, and the exact same part of the body. I had a weird takeaway. Even though I can tell you as a guy that just rewatched this, that was not close, that was not competitive. It was still one of those nights where you look at Pettis and you go, good job, congratulations, but I need to see that again. You made that look so easy that I'm not sure that my eyes are telling me the truth. I need to see that fight again. Is that too big of a stretch for me?
No, I mean, let's run it back, right? You know, both are definitely past their prime. And that was right before I think Pettis won the belt, I believe. So that's right when he was at his peak. But yeah, let's run it back. Two guys are legends, and let's run it back. You know, I just think Pettis has a little bit more in him right now, and Cerrone is just, he's been getting beat up too. You know, he's been taking a beating too, and I don't like to see that in these fighters once they start losing that chin and start going down a lot.
No, I hear you. Look, as a fighter, you're never done with this sport, but you will wake up one day and this sport is done with you. And I don't know that either one of these guys is in that spot. I don't wish that for him, but that is a reality that might unfold in front of us on May 9th.
Absolutely. We'll find out. And it's a great card. I can't wait.
Dave, I appreciate you, buddy. I miss talking to you. I'm glad we finally have something to catch up on. Thank you, pal.